The Senate will please come to order, and the clerk will please call the roll.
Atkinson, Atkinson, Bates, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Burdick, Carter, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Dingfelder, Ferrioli, Ferrioli, George, George, Gerard, Hass, Hass, Johnson, Johnson, Cruz, Metzger, Monis Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Morissette, Morse, Morse, Nelson, Pazansky, Pazansky, Rosenbaum, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Schrader, Starr, Telfer, Verger, Verger, Walker, Walker, Whitsett, Whitsett, Winters, President Courtney.
Huh? With 19.
Start?
19.
Well, I got 20th.
Okay, I haven't got
20. Once Dave Nelson last night, he's doing really well.
Is he?
Yeah, he's doing
Do they know what, have they got the cloud under control?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he's doing great.
Great. Hey, quorum being present, we will post the colors, and Senator Rod Monroe will lead us in the pledge. The invocation today is by Pastor Paul Burdick. He is from the Sunset Covenant Church in Portland. Let's pray together. Creator God, the one who made us, the one who lives among us, none of us here are unaware of the severe hardships we face these days in our land.
We sense the uncertainty and fears of our people. We read about the foreclosures and even know some who are suffering through them. We wince in pain at the businesses that are closing, the families that are struggling, the workers that are losing jobs, the food pantry lines that are growing. In these halls, we carry in our hearts and minds the burden and constant pressure to perform, to bring about some semblance of good news, to make decisions that somehow will make a real difference. Our people look to us for help, and we see the economic realities and the hard choices ahead, and we shudder. Oh God, we cannot do this alone. We need your wisdom, your creativity, your patience, your insights. Give us your stability, that we neither panic nor shrink from the tasks before us. Make us humble and sincere listeners to each other, that laying aside pride and ideology, we might discover solutions that work. Give us courage. Give us strength. Give us new ideas and realistic vision, that what we do here might lead all our people out of the clouds of despair and into the bright light of hope. Remind us, as our ancestors experienced before us, that no matter how deep the pit, you are deeper still. And then in a world of trouble, you cry out to us, as recorded in the Gospel of John, "Take heart, I have overcome the world." Let our hearts now beat with the source of that confidence and live that hope through what we do here. In the name of Jesus, amen.
Thank you, Pastor Paul Burdick. I'd like to thank Senator Rob Monroe for leading us in the pledge. Honorary pages, Audrey Lewis, the guest of Senator Johnson, Alex DeMont, the guest of Senator Dingfelder, Allison Daisy, the guest of Senator Monroe, and John Bosworth, who is the guest of Senator Margaret Carter. Thank you, pages, each and every one of you, for coming here today to help us do the work of the Senate and the work of the state of Oregon. We hope you have a good day. I'd like to extend the courtesy of the Senate to each and every one of you. Also, to the pastor, Paul Burdick, I'd like to extend this courtesy of the Senate to him as well. Appreciate your invocation. Recognize Senator Starr, please.
Thank you, Mr. President and colleagues. I, too, wanted to ask courtesies be extended to Pastor Paul Burdick. The Sunset Covenant Church is in my district. Appreciate the encouraging word and invocation this morning. I think it's something that we all need to pay heed to as we are facing very, very difficult times. But especially like to welcome Pastor Burdick to the Capitol and appreciate him coming from Washington County on a snowy morning to the Capitol. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Starr, for your words. Recognize Senator Carter, please. Senator Carter.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a guest today with me, honorary pages from Grant High School, Alexandra DeMont and John Bosworth, both of them from North Northeast Portland. And Mr. President, the Grant Constitution team has first or second place in the nation more than a dozen times in competition with high schools across the country, and will be competing again in Washington, D.C. in March. And John's mother and Alexander's father are also here with them today on the side aisle, and so I'd like to welcome them as well. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. I'd like to welcome you to the state capitol, your state capitol. I hope you have a good day here. It's an honor and privilege to have you here, and good luck in future competition. Senator, the president, former president, Senator Gene Durfer is on the floor. Do you want to say something about that? Welcome, Senator Durf. I saw you sitting inside aisle. Now I see you, Senator Mark Carter. Pleasure and honor. I hope you'll stay with us throughout our session, Senator Durf, the former president of the Oregon State Senate. Thank you, Senator.
Thank
Durf,
you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Johnson, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I'd like you to extend courtesies to my page, Audrey Lewis. She hails from Seaside, Oregon. She's a member of the dance team, the Key Club, and the Honor Society. She carried in the Oregon flag this morning. She and her mother are here visiting from Seaside, and please extend them courtesies.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Verger, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like for you to welcome some students from Taft High School in Lincoln City. Brian Long is their leader. We are happy to have them in the Capitol today.
Yes, I'd like to welcome the students from Taft, located in Lincoln City. Very pleased you'd come over from the coast and be with us today. It's an honor and a privilege to have you here. I hope you'll stay and have a good day and watch some of the deliberation on the Senate floor. Again, like to extend the courtesies to each and every one of you. Thank you. Remonstrances? Recognize Senator Ferrioli.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, colleagues, all of us know that Oregon is a land of coincidence. For instance, it's only a coincidence that the former executive director of the Oregon Education Association is now the governor's chief of staff. It's merely a coincidence that the former president of AFL-CIO is now the governor's deputy chief of staff. But, Mr. President, I want to inform this body that Oregon is the state of miracles. Let me elucidate. Mark A., Multnomah County. Date of death from the Social Security Administration master file, March 22, 2007. Voted in the November 2007 election, the May 20, 2008 election, and the November 2008 general election. Died March 22, 2007. Voted November 2007, May and November 2008. John R., Jackson County. Date of death, May 2008. Voted May 2008. Voted November 2008. Cynthia F., died April 2008. Voted November 2008, Wallowa County. Milton D. died May 16, 2007. Voted May 20, 2008, November 4, 2008. Mr. President, these will be forwarded to the State Attorney General. We are going to ask for prosecutions, Mr. President. This appears to be voter fraud. Thank you, Mr. President.
Recognize Senator Cruz, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. As I was driving to work this morning in about an inch worth of global warming, it gave me pause to think about the green agenda we are pursuing in this legislative session. Everything from the disastrous cap and trade proposal to actually legislation to tell Oregonians what kind of vehicles they can drive. And I just want to remind this body that last session we passed the ethanol legislation. And look at how well that has worked out for Oregonians. We are not only subsidizing ethanol with our tax dollars, we are paying more at the pump for the fuel, plus we now have to go buy additives to mitigate the damage the ethanol is doing to our cars. And yet everybody, almost everybody in this body voted for the bill last time because it seemed like the right thing to do. Colleagues, seeming like the right thing to do is really a very poor reason for doing something. We need to be slightly more deliberative this session when we look at this quote-unquote green agenda we are pursuing. Thank you.
Recognize Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, the Sesquicentennial History Minute is from the Oregon Historical Society's online educational resource, the Oregon Historic Project in the Oregon Time Web. Black History Month they highlight Dr. DeNorville Unthank. Dr. DeNorville Unthank, a dedicated doctor and civil rights activist, broke many racial barriers in Oregon. His professional and civic achievements made him a target of both social and institutional racism, and he was often barred from hospitals and excluded from medical societies, barriers he spent 40 years overcoming. Unthank was born in Allentown, Pennsylvania on December 14, 1899. He received his medical degree in 1926 and moved to Portland, Oregon in 1929 to start his own practice. It was a time of profound racism in Portland when African Americans faced discrimination in jobs, housing, and social institutions, and it was not uncommon for political figures to associate with the Ku Klux Klan. Against this backdrop, Dr. Unthank chose to move his family to Portland's all-white Westmoreland neighborhood. Neighborhood representatives offered him money to move away, but he refused and endured broken windows, harassment, threatening phone calls, and general hostility. Dr. Unthank would not back down. He was the first African-American member of the Portland City Club, president of the local chapter of the NAACP, and co-founder of the Portland Urban League. He sat on Oregon's Committee for Equal Rights and the Council of Social Agencies. The Oregon Medical Society named him the Doctor of the Year in 1958. In 1969, the city of Portland named a park after Dr. Unthank to honor his contribution to the civil rights struggle. When he died on September 20th, 1977, he was eulogized by colleagues and friends from the medical profession and the many civil rights organizations he helped to create. Mr. President, Dr. Unthank was also my physician. Mr. President, on your desk today, colleagues, is name game. And I encourage each one of you to review that and to return the quiz to me, and whereupon you may be, if you get them correct, win a prize. Thank you, Mr. President.
Recognize Senator Larry George.
Mr. President, colleagues, on your desk, I left for you a letter from Legislative Council. As you know, I tend to be a little bit of a stickler for the issue of rules on the floor. The rules that protect the minority are very important in our process. And when it comes to minority reports, the way the rules have been drafted in committees this year have proved to be insufficient. I ask you to review the letter from Legislative Council regarding the minority report that we did that's going to be presented today. But I want to write to you, the current rules that we have coming out of committee gives the minority 48 hours not only to submit their idea to Legislative Council for the Minority Report and get agreement between the members that are going to sign on to the Minority Report, but then also an entire amount of 48 hours to actually get the complete idea out of Legislative Council. Legislative Council wrote me this letter, and the key point is the last line in the letter from Legislative Council. It says, due to the 48-hour time constraint and the lack of complete analysis of the scope of your request, we are unable to produce a legally sufficient draft that does exactly what you want within the 48 hours established by Rule 13. Colleagues, minority rights are very important in our process. It's about keeping the process open for debate and discussion. The Rule 13 and the draft committee rules that we have put a time constraint where the time that the draft is in Legislative Council counts against the 48 hours of the minority. Even though Legislative Council is a nonpartisan body, that time should not be included. I urge you to read the letter, and Mr. President, I urge that we change committee rules before we get further into the session. Thank you.
Further remonstrances? Curtis, messages from the House.
Mr. President, I'm directed by the Speaker to inform you that the House has passed House Bill 2041, Senate Bill 54, House Bills 2197, 2234.
Reports from conference committees. Reports from standing committees in accordance with SR 8.551 committee report summary number 22, which distributed to members today. This information will be recorded in the Journal State's report. It is so ordered. Reports from special committees. Propositions and motions. All right. I believe we're going to stand in recess for purposes of 15-minute caucuses. Let's come back at 10:50, please. The Senate is in recess at 10:50. Senate will please come to order. The clerk, please call the roll.
Atkinson. Atkinson. Bates. Bates. Bonamici. Bonamici. Boquist. Boquist. Burdick. Burdick. Carter. Carter. Devlin. Devlin. Dingfelder. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. Ferrioli. George. George. Gerard. Gerard. Haas. Haas. Johnson. Johnson. Cruz. Cruz.
Yes,
Metzger. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Montes Anderson.
Yes.
Monroe. Monroe. Morissette. Morissette. Morse. Morse. Nelson. Przonski. Przonski. Rosenbaum. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Schrader. Starr. Starr. Telfer. Telfer. Verger. Verger. Walker. Walker. Whitsett. Whitsett. Winters. Winters. President Courtney.
A quorum is present. The Senate recessed during the order of propositions and motions, and we will resume under that order, and it is so ordered. I will recognize Senator Mark Haas, please.
Mr. President, first of all, I'd like to ask unanimous consent for visual aids, and I would then also move that final consideration of SCR 3 be made a special order of business immediately.
Is there any objections to Senator Mark Haas being allowed to use a visual aid on the Senate floor for purposes of his presentation? I see no objections. Senator Mark Haas has moved that the final consideration of SCR 3 be made a special order of business immediately. Would you please explain your motion, Senator Haas?
Mr. President, arrangements have been made, and the family involved in this resolution is here and present.
Thank you. If there's no objection, it is so ordered. We will now proceed to the special of order of business, which is now before the Senate, and I would ask that the clerk please read the SCR 3.
Senate Concurrent Resolution 3, in memoriam James Willard Bosley, 1935-2008.
I will now recognize Senator Mark Haas, please, who will present.
Well, Mr. President, could there be a more fitting morning in terms of weather to memorialize the most famous weatherman in Oregon history? For many of you, I don't have to explain who Jim Bosley was. The Boz, as he was so affectionately known to Oregonians, was the chief weatherman and meteorologist at KATU Television. He passed away last April and is survived by his wife, Karen, who joins me here at my desk today. And also here today in the side aisle and in the gallery, the Bosley family, including his daughters, Kim Ward and Heidi Walter, and their families, Steve Ward, Brian Walter, grandchildren, Sammy, Ellie, Dalton, and Jack. Jim Bosley was on the air for three decades. Market researchers called him the most recognized head in Oregon. Yes, he was well known. Yes, he was funny. And oh, yes, he was a character. But if that's all he was, then I don't know that we'd be recognizing him today. Jim Bosley was a true Oregonian in the sense that he also felt an obligation to live up to the responsibility that comes with being well known. It was important to him to use his position in the public eye for doing good. There were few charities or community events to which Jim Bosley would say no. He was a Royal Rosarian from the Portland Rose Festival and put in endless hours in that organization. He was active with helping schools, churches, muscular dystrophy organizations, Dornbecker Children's Hospital, even Chemeketa Community College here in Salem, and many, many others. He's been honored with some 70 awards and trophies for his lifetime of work with charities and service organizations. He's been Volunteer of the Year, Meteorologist of the Year, Man of the Year. I worked with Jim for 16 years, and every weekend it seemed like he was at another fundraiser, another auction, another food drive, another walkathon, another parade. Jim Bosley was in more parades than anyone I know. And he did this as a working man. Some of you might not be aware that when there's a newscast every single day, 365 days a year, including holidays. And a lot of the glamour in the television business goes out the window when you're driving to work on Christmas or Thanksgiving. But Jim rang that bell every day. He was there early and he stayed late because for him, he truly loved his job, especially those extreme weather days like this morning. Those were important days for him because he knew people were depending on him. When you look at his career over three decades, you saw the evolution of a weatherman to a professional meteorologist that we have today. In the old days, to be a weatherman, you didn't need to know much more than how to take a magnet of a cloud or a magnet of a sunshine and put it on a board. But today, professional meteorologists use satellites, radars, forecasting models, and sophisticated software. And for Jim, that meant learning these things and actually becoming a certified meteorologist, which he did and became adept at these new technologies that makes weather forecasting so much more precise than it was 30 years ago. And finally, as a meteorologist and a broadcaster, he did something very simple and effective. He invented a 1 to 10 weather rating on a scale. He would rate a day and then tell you what you might expect the weather to be rated tomorrow. It was a communication technique that's been copied in television markets all over the country. When I look outside today, I think the Boz might have given today about a 5, maybe a 6 tomorrow. But when I look at the years Jim Bosley spent helping inform people about their weather and trying to add a little sunshine to the lives of others, I see a life that deserves to be rated as a 10. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Hass. Is there further discussion? Recognize Senator Ted Ferrioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, one of the darkest secrets of my past is, of course, that I grew up in Portland. Went to Grant High School. I started high school in 1965, just 1 year before the Boz started his what became possibly the most important weather broadcast in Oregon. And what always came through was the tremendous warmth of this person and his absolute conviction that he was providing a valuable service to Oregonians, and he was. As a matter of fact, it got to the point where we didn't think that Jim Bosley predicted the weather so much as he made the weather. And he made it enjoyable. He was just an incredible person, and I'm very pleased to add my voice to the support of this Senate concurrent resolution to honor James Bosley. He was an Oregon original. And it's perfectly fitting that we honor his memory and his body of work, and to just say thanks, Jim, for all the hard work and all the good work that you did. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Ferrioli. Recognize Senator Margaret Carter.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want to thank Senator Haas for bringing this piece of legislation to us today, because I used to wake up with Boz in the morning. I told him that one time when he was the speaker at the Tourism Alliance, and he said, "Don't tell my wife about it." I said, "Okay." And he was both witty and very funny, but he also liked politics, because he used to say to me, "What the hell are you people doing in Salem?" Because we were cutting the tourism budget at one time. So he was also what I call a closeted politician as well. And we bid a great man farewell and say to his family, thank you for allowing us to have been able to experience him over these 30 years. And what a contribution he made to Oregon and to the people with his witticism and his what he used to say, his near exacting of science. Thank you.
Recognize. Thank you, Senator Carter. Recognize Senator Metzger, please.
Thank you, Mr. President, and thank you, Senator, for bringing this resolution to us today. I have a fond memory of Jim, and I shared that in the Education Committee when I was 25 years old. 1977, had been starting as a sportscaster for only 4 months, and we were at one of those dinners. I can't remember for whom the benefit was, and sitting with Mr. Dargan, who was the general manager at K2 at the time, and Tom McCall, who's back doing commentary after his governorship, and Mr. Jim Bosley. And Jim leaned over to me as, in his witty way, said, "Kid," says, "I know you're doing the sports over there at six, but you should have talked to me. You know, you could have been a weatherman, because I got the best gig in town. I'm never wrong. I'm never mispredicting the weather, because it's always 40% chance of rain or 40% chance of sun. And I'm never wrong, and you always have to pick who wins and loses." And so he just had that great personality dynamic. Your husband was just sensational, and as Senator Haas pointed out, was just ubiquitous in the community. I mean, he was just everywhere, I think more than anybody that I knew in the broadcasting arena. And when you look at, we would always look at ratings. Our managers would always keep our jobs. They would always have the Arbitron sweeps and see whether they cared about Mr. Haas or Mr. Metzger, or otherwise you're out of a job. Jim Bosley's, you know, numbers were always huge. You know, everybody would love to have had Jim Bosley. And when we think about people in government like ourselves, and if we can get a double-digit approval rating, we think that's great, you know, and he was always skyrocketing in terms of how he was regarded by the community. So thank you for bringing this forward. He did a lot for not only broadcasting, but also for community service, and thank you for being here today and your family as well.
Thank you, Senator Metzger. Further discussion? Senator Haas, do you wish to close? He does not. Question now arises upon the third reading, the final passage of SCR 3. Those who are of the opinion that the resolution should be adopted will answer aye as their names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will please call the roll.
Girard. Haas. Johnson.
Aye.
Cruz.
Aye.
Metzger.
Aye.
Montes Anderson.
Aye.
Monroe.
Aye.
Morissette.
Aye.
Morse.
Aye.
Nelson. Pozanski.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Schrader.
Aye.
Starr. Starr.
Aye.
Telfer.
Aye.
Verger. Walker.
Aye.
Whitsett. Whitsett. Winters.
Aye.
Atkinson.
Yes.
Bates.
Aye.
Bonamici.
Aye.
Boquist.
Aye.
Burdick.
Aye.
Carter.
Aye.
Devlin.
Aye.
Dinkfelder.
Aye.
Ferrioli.
Aye.
George.
Aye.
President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused. Nelson. 29 ayes.
SCR 3, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. To the Bosley family, I want you to know the Senate has just given its highest honor and statement of appreciation and respect to your loved one in passing SCR 3. We miss him. I know I did. I would tune in to just listen to his weather, just to listen to him. And we know that you're hurting now, but I want you to know that through the Senate's actions today, we felt we needed to recognize James Willard Bosley this way. We hope in some small way it may have eased your broken hearts. He was a great Oregonian, and the Senate stands proud today to recognize him through its actions on SCR3. Thank you very much for coming here today. It's an honor and a privilege to have all his loved ones here. And thank you, Senator Marquez, for coming up with the idea that we should memorialize this great Oregonian. Thank you. The clerk will read under propositions and motions we go now. Excuse me, Senator Devlin, for what purpose are you, have you risen?
Thank you, Mr. President, colleagues. Wait. I move the consideration.
What's up?
Thank you. I have at my desk former state representative and county commissioner Lonnie Roberts, who is accompanying a group from Greater Portland Christian Academy and their teacher, Tally Heim. These first and second grade students are in the aisle over here. They are now standing.
What grade?
Fourth grade. They're fourth grade students. You know, my note's wrong. Anyway, Commissioner Roberts has been a longtime friend of mine. Please welcome these young people. They're enjoying our Capitol today.
Thank you. Welcome. I'm glad you would come to the side aisle and give us a wave. We hope you have a great day in your state capitol and come back and see us again. Appreciate your coming here. We will now return to the regular order of business for the state Senate. I'll recognize Senator Devlin, please.
Thank you, Mr. President, colleagues. I move the consideration of House Bill 2436 be made a special order of business immediately following action on Senate Bill 328.
The Devlin has moved the consideration of HB 2436 be made a special order of business immediately following action of Senate Bill 328. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. President, colleagues. I think this will help us expeditiously address the business that needs to be accomplished today.
Are there objections? Hearing none, it is so ordered. We will now proceed to the special order of business. Recognize Senator Betsy Johnson. Nope. We got a little thing up here we got to work out. Just a little deal.
Okay. Now we're going to do this. Tell your people if they quit changing their minds and everything.
I understand what you're saying. Okay, now we're going to do it again. For those watching, we are organized. The clerk will read the committee report and the minority report on Senate Bill 328.
President Courtney, your Committee on Consumer Protection and Public Affairs, to whom was referred Senate Bill 328, having had the same under consideration, respectfully reports back, recommending due pass.
Recognize.
President Courtney, a minority of your Committee on Consumer Protection and Public Affairs, to whom was referred Senate Bill 328, having had the same under consideration, respectfully reports it back, recommending due pass with amendments printed A engrossed, minority.
I will recognize Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. President, excuse me. I move that the committee report on Senate Bill 328 be adopted.
Senator Bonamici has moved that the committee report on SB 328 be adopted. Please explain the committee report.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, Senate Bill 328 was brought to us by the Attorney General through the Senate Committee on Consumer Protection and Public Affairs. The committee report is short, simple, and significant. The committee report adds one sentence to Oregon's primary consumer protection statute, the Oregon Unlawful Trade Practices Act. It makes violation of Oregon's Fair Debt Collection Practices Act an unlawful trade practice, which allows the Attorney General to enforce illegal debt collection practices. This change will deter unlawful practices that victimize Oregonians. It permits enforcement against unscrupulous debt collectors and makes it possible for Oregon's Attorney General to join other attorneys general in suits against out-of-state debt collectors. The Attorney General is able to use existing staff from the Financial Fraud Consumer Protection Section, and accordingly this bill has no fiscal impact. The committee report on Senate Bill 328 does not change the Oregon Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. It does not add anyone to the provisions of the Oregon Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. It does not change what conduct is permitted or prohibited. That's right. The committee report on Senate Bill 328 does not make one single change to the Oregon Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Importantly, the committee report on Senate Bill 328 does not impede the fair and honest collection of debts. Colleagues, when ruthless debt collectors are harassing Oregonians, the law needs to be enforced. I urge your support of the committee report on Senate Bill 328. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Bonamici. I now recognize Senator Larry George.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move the minority report be substituted for the committee report on Senate Bill 328.
Senator George has moved that the minority report be substituted for the committee report on 328. Please explain your motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. One of the things that I found most interesting about the discussion is that as we go into tough economic times, this is going to be a time when Oregon families are going to be under an immense amount of pressure. Families that have found themselves overextended, families that have found themselves with one or two breadwinners out of jobs can find themselves in a very desperate situation and may fall into a situation where they become behind on their bills. As we do this, what's going to happen is that debt collectors are going to become ever more aggressive. I was surprised to find out that DCBS does not regulate the action between the debt collector and the consumer. They regulate the relationship between the debt collector and the originator of the debt. And as I looked at this, there's a gaping hole from my perspective in how we regulate debt collectors in this state and the power that has been given to the Department of Consumer and Business Services to regulate debt collectors. They issue out licenses, but they do not have the power to revoke those licenses without us taking a step forward. To deal with this, the Attorney General has brought forward a proposal for litigation where the Attorney General's office could litigate against bad players in the debt collection business. That may be a step that we would want to take, but it seems like to me that the very first step that we ought to take to try to make sure that we have the regulatory structure in place is to transfer the authority to the Department of Consumer and Business Services, the power to regulate, and give them the power to bring different levels of punishment to different players within the debt collection arena, which could include the revoking of their license. The majority report gives the Attorney General the right to litigate, but does not give the Attorney General the right to take away the license. I view that this is the correct and moderate step in trying to find a balance between making sure that people and financial institutions and investors who loan money to consumers, the right to collect those dollars back, at the same time protect consumers from bad actors in the debt collection world. The minority report on Senate Bill 328, I believe, is a good step in the right direction. Will give the structure and the regulatory structure within the DCBS that we need to make sure that bad players are regulated without the heavy hand of regulation and the potential in the future, especially as this becomes a bigger issue, to politicize what should be a very serious regulatory issue. For that reason, I urge my colleagues to vote yes on the minority report. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. We're now discussing and under discussion on the minority report. Senator Gerard, please.
Thank you, Mr. President, to the minority report. Colleagues, this isn't a question of do debt collectors need oversight. No one is arguing that. The question is, who's going to do the oversight? Is it going to be DCBS or is it going to be the Attorney General? Now, we have a lot of statutes and a lot of agencies, and a lot of people are regulated by this state, so let's look at precedents. Who regulates doctors? The licensing board. Who regulates dentists like myself? The licensing board. Veterinarians? Licensing board. Teachers, lawyers, CPA, contractors. Everybody that is virtually licensed in this state is regulated by the licensing board. DCBS issues the license. What's the biggest thing that can happen to a company? They lose their license. So the most economical way, the best way, the way not to clog up the courts is to allow DCBS, not the Attorney General, to regulate debt collectors.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm not supporting the minority report, but I think it has merit, and I want to address that. I think it has merit in some of the comments that have been made that we ask licensing agencies to license and regulate the people whom they obtain licenses from. This minority report doesn't get where they want it to be, but I want to just tell you all, we're in a situation of our own making. Our own making, colleagues. 8 years ago, the Legislative Assembly passed a bill that allowed debt collection agencies that are from out of state to come into Oregon and not be domiciled here. We allowed the Department of Consumer Business Services to offer a waiver of that domicile. So we went from a few complaints a year to about 800 complaints a year. So if you're asking yourselves about debt collectors and the problems that they've created, we created the problem. So how you solve it is the issue. Today we have before us Senate Bill 328, and we have the minority report. So we choose today to decide how we wish to solve it. But I just want to let you know that the minority report has merit. It's not worthy of my vote today because it doesn't get where I think it needs to be. But I think the discussion has something to talk about. But let's look at how we got here. And so next time we pass these laws, let's think about the consequences. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Walker. Can I say to Cruz?
Thank you, Mr. President. To the minority report.
To the minority report, please.
I appreciate the words of my good colleague from Lane County when she said that this has merit. It does have merit. Is it perfected? No. But we heard in remonstrance today why this was not perfected. It was a timing issue. But clearly, let's look at how we regulate folks in this state. It's through their boards. You know, if we have a bad actor, what's the biggest threat we can give them in this case? It's revocation of license. Is it better for us to be able to do something on a broad scale rather than have to chase each particular complaint individually? And that's what would have to happen in the Attorney General's office. I think the most efficient, most cost-effective way is to keep it where it belongs. Do we need this? Absolutely. But I think this is another case where what we're proposing in the committee report is the wrong direction to go and will not get us the results we're after. The minority report needs some work. I will admit that. It's not the fault of the carrier. It's the fault of the process. But if we pass the minority report, it can be perfected on the other side of the building. Unfortunately, that's the option we have. Defeating the minority report and passing the committee report sends the state of Oregon in the wrong direction on this issue.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. Recognize Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I too appreciate the comments from the good senator from Eugene. Fact of the matter is the minority report's a better bill. Under the majority report, the AG is going to be one at a time in it to file a complaint. If, and he will take up the complaint and analyze it and investigate it and file motions and cross motions and filings and pleadings, creating expense and delay and motions and cross motions and more misery on every single complaint until you build up a file of complaints so that you can show a pattern of issues, and then he'll go back to the licensing agency and say, pull their license. But if you want to stop a bad practice, you pull the license. And then the calls stop. The harassment stops. The bad practices stop. You have a great opportunity to have a conversation about reinstatement and following the law and doing the things people want to see done. We do regulate these agencies. But one at a time in it isn't going to get the bad actors off the telephone and out of the faces of hardworking Oregonians who may just fallen a little bit behind because of the economy. And Mr. President, and to the carrier of the Minority Report, this is a better bill. And so often the better idea is resisted simply because of who had the idea. And that is something that I hope people decide to change in this process. We shouldn't care where the idea comes from. We should care that it's a good idea. This is a better idea than the minority party bill. I please beg you to consider the better idea and move forward on the minority report. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Bonamici, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. To the minority report.
To the minority report.
Colleagues, as you've heard from the Senator from Sherwood and other proponents of the Minority Report seeks to have the Department of Consumer and Business Services enforce the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. Now, there's no mistaking that the Department of Consumer and Business Services does excellent work as a regulatory agency. In this area, however, they regulate the relationship between the creditors and the collection agencies, which are their licensees. They do not regulate the practices of debt collectors when dealing with consumers. And the enforcement actions that they've brought have been between that relationship, between, for example, businesses at higher collection agencies and the collection agencies. But importantly, the Department of Consumer and Business Services registers collection agencies. But colleagues, the Oregon Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, which was passed in the 1970s with the support of the Oregon Collectors Association, covers anyone collecting a consumer debt. It is not limited to collection agencies, and accordingly, the Minority Report covers nowhere near all of the entities that need to comply with the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. An important example is debt buyers. We've seen a proliferation of these entities in the past several years, and according to the National Consumer Law Center, debt buyers, who typically buy massive quantities of debt for pennies on the dollar, are engaged in some of the most egregious practices. And these abuses are often exacerbated because debt buyers often do not have the information that they need to respond to inquiries about the debt, such as the identity of the original creditor and the amount of the debt. Furthermore, and importantly, there's a fiscal impact on the Minority Report. According to the Department of Consumer Business Services and the Legislative Fiscal Office, Department of Consumer and Business Services would need for the 2009-2011 session an additional $262,200, and for 2011 to 2013, $349,600. And that's just to govern the relationship with debt collection agencies, not all of the other entities collecting a consumer debt. As the Attorney General testified in our committee, he's not interested in putting people out of work, especially in these difficult economic times. And I submit that in these difficult economic times, we cannot justify spending an additional several hundred thousand dollars to create a new enforcement division when a more comprehensive alternative exists that can be accomplished with existing resources. Colleagues, the Minority Report may look good on the surface, but once it's analyzed, it's clear that the committee report on Senate Bill 328 provides better protection for Oregon consumers without additional revenue or increased fees. I urge you to defeat the Minority Report. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Bonamici. Further discussion on the motion. I recognize Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just very briefly, I would ask the members of the Assembly here to apply this concept to your own life. Would you really want the Department of Justice to regulate your license to practice law or to teach, or to practice accounting, to own a car dealership, to be a doctor, a dentist, veterinarian, a media broadcaster, or even a university president? I think not. I will vote in favor of the minority report. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Whitson. Further discussion? If there's no further discussion, Senator George, would you like to close on your motion?
Yes, Mr. President. Thank you. Colleagues, the good senator from Senate District 13, the chair of the committee, had brought up this whole issue of how we deal with debt collectors, and I applaud her for her work and her defense of consumers. And I think that what she convinced everybody in the committee by bringing this issue forward is that there needs to be something to address a problem that we see, a hole in our regulatory process. And I would say that the entire committee came to the belief and the agreement that there needed to be some additional regulation of some sort. The question is how that's done. The good senator from Senate District 13 mentioned that the minority report doesn't go far enough, and that is correct. That was part of the constraints put on the minority by the 48-hour rule, and I really agree that the minority report needs to be expanded. But this is about how we do regulation. If you look at our entire body of law, the Legislative Assembly has decided to structure our regulatory process through the agencies, through a licensing requirement that then regulates the players in that industry. The Attorney General only becomes engaged in the most extreme cases. The hole in the law is not that the Attorney General doesn't have that power, because the Attorney General currently has that power to go after the extreme cases. The hole in the law is that our regulating entity, the Department of Consumer and Business Services, does not have the regulatory power to go after the bad players. As the good senator from Klamath Falls pointed out, if you applied what we're doing to any other area of regulatory law, it makes no sense. And I don't think the majority report makes sense here. And that's why we need to pass the minority report, because it fills the gap in the regulatory process. After we analyze that, 328 may be, the majority report may be necessary in the future. But right now, what we need is the minority report. And I urge an aye vote on the minority report. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. The question now arises upon the substitution of the minority report for the committee report. All those in favor of substituting the minority report for the committee report will answer aye as the names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will please call the roll.
Hess. Hess. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Prezonsky. No. Rosenbaum. No. Schrader. No. Starr. Yes. Telfer. Aye. Verger. No. Walker. No. Whitsett. Yes. Winters. Aye. Atkinson. Yes. Bates. No. Bonamici. Yes. Boquist. Burdick. No. Carter. No. Devlin. No. Dingfelder. No. Ferrioli. George. Yes. Girard. No. President Courtney.
No.
Excused. Nelson. Voting no. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick.
Excuse me? What purpose did you arise, Senator Girard? Okay. Has it now been recorded correctly? Thank you. Proceed, please.
Excused, Nelson. Voting no. Bates.
Excuse me. Is there more noise? What is happening? If someone wishes to put their light on, I will recognize them. Otherwise, I would like to ask that we do not just simply verbalize something. If there is a problem, please go to your desk, put on your light, and I'll record it. Recognize Senator Boquist, please.
Mr. President, I voted yes, and it was the correct color, and somehow it went to red.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wants to record a vote differently than what has been recorded on the board, recognizing yes is green, no is red? Not trying to be a fool. All right. I'm sorry to interrupt, but the reading clerk, please proceed.
Excused, Nelson. Voting no, Bates, Bonamici, Burdick, Carter, Devlin, Dingfelder, Haas, Johnson, Metzger, Montes Anderson, Monroe, Morissette, Prozonsky, Rosenbaum, Schrader, Verger, Walker, President Courtney. 11 ayes.
The minority report has failed. In accordance with SR 8.602, the Senate will take action immediately on the third reading. Excuse me, Senator Ferrioli, for what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. Vote explanation.
Please file your vote explanation.
Mr. President, I voted yes on the motion and apologize for verbalizing prior to the closing of that vote. But as you know, if the gavel falls, then we have to go back and get permission of the body to change a vote. So apologize for verbalizing in that way. But we were only attempting to get your attention because I voted yes, Mr. President. Thank you.
Thank you. In accordance with SR 8.602, the Senate will take action immediately on the third reading of Senate Bill 328 as amended by the committee report. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 328 relating to unlawful collection practices.
Recognize Senator Bonamici.
Thank you very much, Mr. President. Colleagues, I've had the opportunity in the last couple of weeks to see a production of Shakespeare's Merchant of Venice. And although it's been centuries since his character Shylock demanded a pound of flesh from Antonio to collect a debt, some of the stories that we've heard in committee are as alarming to us as the fictional Shylock's antics would have been in his time. In the Consumer Protection Committee, we learned about a woman who testified that she was called up to 9 times a day at work, days in a row. They threatened arrest and kept her from doing her job. And it wasn't even her debt. We heard about a mother in a wheelchair. She was trying to call 911 to get help for her disabled son, who was having a heart attack. But a bank collecting a debt would not let her off the phone. She hung up. They called back again, tying up the phone, and she had to wheel her wheelchair through the rain to her neighbor's house to call 911. A caregiver for a disabled Oregonian named Rachel submitted testimony to us about calls to the woman he cares for. The collector used profanity and threatened to kill her. We received testimony from a woman named Jessica who talked about calls she received from a law firm, an out-of-state law firm that was threatening to file felony charges against her for a $430 debt. A man from Eugene, a doctor and a landlord, submitted testimony about multiple calls he received daily from collectors looking for his former tenants. Some of the calls came in the middle of the night, some at 3 and 4 in the morning. And, Mr. President, because of the dignity of this chamber, I will not repeat some of the profanity that was said to him by this debt collector. For the past decade, colleagues, about unlawful debt collection practices have been on the top 10 list of complaints at the Department of Justice. An irony because the agency is without the authority to enforce the law that is being violated. And with the economy in crisis, we can only expect the problem to get worse as Oregonians fall behind on their bills. Colleagues, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act sets out our state's policy for the fair collection of debts by making it unlawful practice to threaten force, violence, or criminal prosecution, to use obscene language, communicate repeatedly at times known to be inconvenient, communicate with a debtor's employer about the debt, to use letters or documents that simulate legal process, and other specific violations that are set out in the statute. So what happens if there is a violation of the act? Not much. Very few consumers seek the help of an attorney. These are consumers already in financial difficulty, and importantly, many of these Oregonians are victims of identity theft and don't actually owe the debt. They may have the misfortune of having a common name, and they're being harassed about someone else's obligation. Their debt or alleged debt may be just a few hundred dollars, and finding an attorney to take such a case is a challenge. In other states, like California and Washington, for example, their attorney general enforces their Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. It's time to close the West Coast loophole and let unscrupulous debt collectors know that they are not welcome here. Please join me in voting aye on Senate Bill 328. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Bonamici. We're now under discussion. I'll recognize Senator Vicky Walker, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Many of you know that for 25 years I've been a practicing court reporter. I ended that career at the end of 2008. For 25 years I worked in the United States Bankruptcy Court of the state of Oregon in the District of Eugene. And we have seen these kinds of cases over the years. In fact, in December, on my trip to Klamath Falls, the Eugene Bankruptcy Court travels to Klamath Falls about every 2 months. And this was my last trip with the court to Klamath Falls, and we actually had a case where the debtor brought a complaint, an adversary proceeding, that's what it's called in bankruptcy, against a collection agency because they had harassed them endlessly. When you're in bankruptcy, it stays all collection of your debt. Every single collection of your debt comes to a halt. And if a collector or anyone attempts to collect on that debt, you may file a proceeding in court and you can seek judgment against the collector of that debt. Now, this collection agency was an out-of-state collection agency, like many of them are, that caused these problems. And the woman had recorded the messages from the collector, and she played those in court. The court ended up entering a judgment against the collection agency, who did not appear for this case because they were out of state, and the debtor was then free to go and collect the judgment. Therein lies the problem. The debtor was then free to collect the judgment. This bill would allow the Attorney General to collect a judgment. So unless we change the law, as we discussed previously in the attempt at the minority report, unless we change the law and allow the collectors to increase their fees to change the way we regulate this industry, we really have little opportunity for consumers to seek redress. So I will support this bill today because I'm not going to walk out of here today without having something else for the consumer to be able to rely on. However, I still think there is merit to having this control in the department that regulates these collectors and changing the law that we implemented in 2001. So that's why I will support this bill today, to protect those people who can't go out and collect on the debt themselves, the judgments, any judgments they receive, and hopefully we can get where we need to be. But I do hope this chamber and the one across the building continues to have discussions about whether is this the right way or is there another way. And that's usually why we have two chambers, to engage in those kinds of conversations. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Walker. Can I send a Gerard, please?
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to question my favorite senator from Sherwood, please. Where are you from?
Senator, excuse me. With the carrier of the bill, would the carrier of the bill respond to a question?
Mr. President, I'm not from Sherwood, but I gladly respond to the question.
The carrier will. Please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. The question I have is, could you please tell us in detail what it would take for the Attorney General to actually yard the license of an unscrupulous debt collector? To take away the license?
Well, Senator, the Attorney General has several powers under the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. The Attorney General can do an investigative demand. They can seek an assurance of voluntary compliance. They can seek restitution on behalf of consumers, and they can get injunctive relief. The licensing of collection agencies is done by the Department of Consumer and Business Services.
Further question, Mr. President?
Would the carrier respond?
Yes, Mr. President.
The carrier will.
The question I have, if he has to do all this and he still really hasn't taken the license away, how is he going to do this at no cost to the government?
Senator, the Attorney General has a Financial Fraud and Consumer Protection Division. They have staff there now, and they are able to enforce this act. They already enforced the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. This just puts one line in the Unlawful Trade Practices Act that states that a violation of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act is a violation of the Unfair Trade Practices Act. So they already have the enforcement staff there to enforce the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, so they're all set to do this with existing staff.
Mr. President, to the bill.
To the bill, please.
Colleagues, again, the question is who's going to regulate and why? And I think we had some misinformation. First of all, we were told that there's no financial impact if we allow the Attorney General to regulate. And I think it's very obvious to everyone in this room, if you're going to have somebody regulated, it's going to take court appearances, it's going to take staff, it's going to take a lot of things. And so there is going to be a financial impact that's going to happen if the Attorney General regulates. So again, the question is, who do we want to regulate here? And I think if you're going to do something, I think it should be done right. And I think the right way to do it is with DCBS. No one's saying that debt collectors do not need to be regulated, because I myself have had a problem with a debt collector, and I don't want to go into it because I rarely have any debt. But I got calls at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I wasn't very grateful for it. So I think that we most certainly need to regulate, but it needs to be through DCBS, and it does absolutely going in the wrong direction if we do it with the Attorney General. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Right. Further discussion? There's no further discussion. Senator Bonamici, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. President. Very briefly. Colleagues, this is a law enforcement measure. The Department of Consumer and Business Services is a regulatory agency, and they regulate many entities under which that are licensed under the DCBS. The Attorney General is going to enforce violations of the law. I want to emphasize that Senate Bill 328 does not allow people to avoid their debts. This short, simple, and significant bill is to assure that collectors are operating honestly, fairly, and without intimidation, and they face consequences when they violate the law. I urge your aye vote. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you. Thank you. Senator Devlin has demanded a call of the House. It's called the Senate. I don't know why I do that. He is joined by Senator Burdick and Senator Rosenbaum. The doorkeepers will bar the doors. The sergeant-at-arms will attend. The clerk will call the roll of the state Senate.
Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Gerard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Przonski. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Verger. Walker. Whitsett. Whitsett. Winters. President Courtney.
He is here. All members subject to the call are present. The question now arises upon the third reading and final passage of SB 328. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will answer aye as the names are called. Those opposed, no. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Johnson.
Aye.
Cruz.
No.
Metzger.
Aye.
Montes Anderson.
Aye.
Monroe.
Aye.
Morissette.
Aye.
Morse.
Aye.
Nelson. Przonski.
Aye.
Rosenbaum.
Aye.
Schrader.
Aye.
Starr.
Aye.
Starr.
Aye.
Telfer.
Aye.
Verger. Verger.
Senator Verger.
Walker.
Aye.
Whitsett. Winters.
Aye.
Atkinson.
No.
Bates.
Aye.
Bonamici.
Aye.
Boquist.
Aye.
Burdick.
Aye.
Carter.
Aye.
Devlin.
Aye.
Dingfelder.
Aye.
Ferrioli.
No.
George.
No.
Gerard.
No.
Haas. President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused, Nelson, voting no, Atkinson, Ferrioli, George, Gerard, Cruz, Whitsett, 23 ayes.
Senate Bill 328, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. We will now proceed to the special order of business. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 2436, relating to public programs for housing, prescribing an effective date and providing for revenue raising that requires approval by a three-fifths majority.
Recognize Senator Betsy Johnson, please, the carrier.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I'm pleased to bring you House Bill 2436, Housing Opportunity Bill, which provides greatly needed dedicated funding stream for affordable housing, helping to end and prevent homelessness and expanding home ownership opportunities for low-income Oregonians. Earlier today, Senator Carter and I joined with others for the announcement of a MacArthur Foundation $5 million grant to the state of Oregon. This follows the lead of the Meyer Memorial Trust with a million dollar philanthropic grant, the Oregon Community Foundation, the Collins Foundation. As a vote of confidence in our ability to leverage resources for maximum benefit and a recognition of the tremendous unmet housing need in this state. Oregon Housing and Community Development has a proven track record of delivering on its commitment to preserve affordable housing in Oregon. This is one more tool in their toolbox. With the construction industry losing jobs at a dramatic pace, these dollars couldn't come at a more opportune time. This investment will generate jobs, sales activity at local businesses, and better yet, decent, stable, affordable housing for people who deserve it, hardworking families, seniors, and people with disabilities. The elements of the bill add a new $15 fee to the existing fees pertaining to deeds and mortgage records filed with county clerks, mining claims, warrants issued by the Employment Department, liens and judgment records, and the Department of Revenue are not subject to the fee. The bill creates a new statutory account within the Housing and Community Services Department. The $15 fee imposed by this measure would be collected by the counties for deposit into specified accounts within Housing and Community Services Department for affordable housing-related programs. The new fee is effective 91 days after the regular session adjournment sine die. House Bill 2436 is projected to result in total collections of $15 million in the 2009-11 biennium and $26.5 million in the 2011-2013 budget. Monies collected from the fee are to be used by Housing and Community Services for housing-related programs in the following manner. 76% of the monies must be deposited into a new general housing account. Housing will use the funds deposited into this general housing account to finance multifamily affordable rental housing and to provide training, technical, and financial assistance to community housing partners to address local affordable housing needs. 10% of the money must be deposited into the existing emergency housing account established under ORS 458620 and used for the purposes including emergency shelter, transitional and supportive housing services, and emergency assistance payments to homeless persons and those at risk of becoming homeless. 14% of the money must be deposited into the existing home ownership assistance account for the purpose of including construction of new or rehabilitation of existing housing for persons of low or very low income, down payment assistance, and home ownership education. Your Ways and Means Committee recommends approval of this bill. Last, the Oregon Association of County Clerks does not oppose House Bill 2436, but claim that it is an unfunded mandate and have requested that it be amended to allocate 5% of the additional fee to the benefit of the county clerks. A February 16, 2009 letter from Legislative Council states that House Bill 2436 does not create an unfunded mandate and concludes that, quote, neither the one-time cost nor the ongoing cost of House Bill 2436 represent a new program or increased level of service for county government, close quote. I urge your support of House Bill 2436.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Recognize Senator Farioli, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, will the carrier yield to a question?
Would the carrier yield, please?
She will.
Carrier will.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I see by the reader board that this measure requires a three-fifths majority. May I inquire as to why that is so?
I am reviewing the Legislative Council's letter to see if it speaks to that point. And would like a minute to do so, if you don't mind.
Please take a minute.
Thank you. To speak to your question, the 2007 legislative session determined that this was a revenue-raising matter, and that's why it requires the majority vote.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, to the bill.
To the bill, please.
Thank you. I thank the good senator, because basically she gave me the answer that is an accurate answer. This is a tax. It is a revenue-raising measure. That is a tax. You can call it a fee until you're purple. It doesn't matter. A fee is a dollar amount collected that relates in some manner to the service being provided. That's a fee. A revenue-raising measure is a tax. That's why it requires a three-fifths majority. It's a tax. This is nothing more than a real estate transfer tax. You can call it anything you want to, but it's a tax. It's a real estate transfer tax. And let me point out something, Mr. President. The county clerk's report of fiscal impact to implement the measure. Mr. President, may I have permission to read from the fiscal analysis that was prepared by our own staff?
Without objection, please feel free to do
so. Thank you, Mr. President. County clerk's report of fiscal impact to implement this measure, a one-time cost associated with reprogramming existing accounting systems, updating fee schedules, public information materials, training across 36 counties are estimated at $812,000 initially, and ongoing auditing and reconciliation of the new tax is estimated to be $187,200 per year. Mr. President, we've been told that there's no fiscal impact, no harm to the counties. They will have to reconcile their daily drop and segregate the amount collected for this tax and make daily deposits of this tax into the state accounts. It is a new burden. It is something that the counties have come to the legislature and asked us if, please, could we allow them to collect a 5% administrative cost? In other words, Mr. President, 75 cents per page to make them whole for the additional work that it'll take to implement this program. And we have said no. You know, you're already doing this work. Well, they proved that they're not already doing this work, because segregating these dollars is a whole different process than the current program, and it covers different documents. And they've testified to this. They've written to every member of the legislature. I have a file, and I'm sure other members also do, of the communications from county recorders. But the primary issue for me is that I just do not want to sit here or stand here on this chamber floor and have a tax requiring a three-fifths majority to masquerade as a fee. I would tell every member in here that when they vote on this bill, they're voting on a tax bill. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator. I recognize Senator Starr.
Thank you, Mr. President. Colleagues, I am in the Subcommittee of Ways and Means, where we had heard this bill. I did offer an amendment for consideration that would have provided the opportunity for the county clerks and the recorders to get their 5% fee like they collect and other fees that they collect. That amendment was not supported by a majority on the committee and failed, and that's kind of where we are here today. If I look at this issue, one of the things that really frustrates me is this idea that is the urban-rural piece of this. Most of the county clerks that we heard from, or that I heard from, were from the more rural counties in our state. They're the ones, I think, that are going to be most harmed by this bill, potentially. My hope is that as this bill is going to move off the Senate floor today, I have little doubt that it will pass, that this legislature will reconsider this particular issue, especially in light of the federal forest funds and dollars that are coming to rural counties, and at some point in time those dollars are going to run out. A number of our rural counties are in difficult shape. You look at the counties that are supporting this measure, they're mostly the urban counties or the larger counties, the counties that, you know, do have significant infrastructure in place to accommodate perhaps these fees. It's the rural counties that I'm concerned about, and I hope that we can come back in another legislative vehicle, perhaps help to make the counties whole in this regard. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Starr. Further discussion? Senator Johnson, excuse me, Senator Whitsitt.
Thank you, Mr. President. While House Bill 2436 does address a noble cause, the time to levy a $17 million new tax to create an entirely new program is not when our projected budget is $3 billion upside down for the next budget cycle. $3 billion at least. This new tax will escalate to nearly $28 million in the following budget cycle. Notwithstanding the logic of our learned legislative counsel, this bill requires our county clerks to perform a substantial amount of work without being paid for performing that work. If this bill does not legally create an unfunded mandate under Oregon law, it certainly does create a substantial unpaid workload for the county employees that must be paid for by the counties. There's a significant amount of work produced. Someone has to pay for it. Under this bill, it will be the counties. In short, because it is not a tax, because it is a tax, it is not an unfunded mandate. If it were actually a fee, it would be an unfunded mandate. Mr. President, our citizens, our counties, our taxpayers do not and should not appreciate what I would characterize as this kind of sleight of hand. The rural counties are virtually unanimous in support of the concept, but they want to be paid for the work that they produce to collect this money and distribute it. I urge a no vote. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Whitsitt. Recognize Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your Ways and Means Committee that worked on this bill heard from the clerks and considered their request. We understand that counties are in deep financial trouble and that the clerks would like to have more money. But we looked at the fact that they are currently collecting $11 on every document, and that this, under this measure, they will collect $26 instead of $11. It doesn't cost any more to collect $26 than it does to collect $11. They will have to make a payment quarterly, every 3 months, send a check. Your Ways and Means Committee didn't feel that that was an onerous responsibility and certainly would not be requisite to a 5% of the total take. But let's get off of that and dwell about on why this bill is before us. We're in a very difficult time. There are homeless people, many thousands of homeless people in Oregon. This measure, in cooperation with the new federal administration, will provide money for many new affordable housing units. And more importantly, it will provide down payment help. We all know that the most difficult thing for people trying to build their lives is to get into their first house. And with the mortgage situation that we find in the nation today, it's increasingly difficult to get that down payment to get into that first starter house. You know, some of us have been lucky enough to have relatives that help us with that down payment. My wife and I took some money that my father had left us and made a $10,000 payment so my son could get into his first house. But a lot of people don't have those kinds of privileges. Another issue that this measure addresses that's critical, perhaps not so much right now with land values as they are, but it certainly has been in the past and will be again in the future, and that's the closing of manufactured home parks. For many people, it's the only home that they can afford is a mobile home, a manufactured home. And when the park where they rent the space closes, they lose not only their home, because manufactured homes in a rental park are of very little value, and even though they are called or used to be called mobile homes, they're really not very mobile. Many of these people simply then will go into either the rental market if they can afford it, or will become homeless. Stabilizing manufactured home parks, allowing those residents to cooperatively purchase the park,
before the land squeeze starts again and developers start gobbling them up once again, is a critical part of this legislation. Let's give Oregonians a safe and stable place to raise families. Vote yes.
Thank you. I recognize Senator Lori Montes-Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. I want everyone in this body to realize that this bill actually came forward at the request of the Oregon Housing Alliance, the Oregon Association of Realtors, the Oregon Bankers Association, and the Oregon Home Builders Association. And these organizations had spent 18 months during the interim developing an acceptable solution for permanent financing for affordable housing. This agreement was really unprecedented, as those organizations have really spent a lot of years disagreeing on the policies. And I believe this House bill strikes a balance between the dire need for affordable housing during this economic crisis, and it is a reasonable funding stream that will not endanger home sales. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. I recognize Senator Cruz, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's always interesting when you hear about a letter of all these folks who are supportive of a concept. What you don't ever hear is the backstory of the alternative that was offered to them if they didn't support it. And I think that's the case, because we heard for the last year or so that one thing that was on the table was a significant, massive real estate transfer tax. And I think this is what was accepted in lieu of that. It's still a real estate transfer tax. It's just a lesser version than what could have been offered. So I question all of the groups that support things unless I know the backstory and know what I'm finding in this session. There are a lot of folks who have said, you support this or it'll be worse. And I think this is one of those cases where we have folks supporting something to try to avoid something worse happening to them. And by the way, there is more work involved for county clerks in this. They have to file daily reports now. They haven't up till now. I think my good colleague from Hillsborough is right. This is an urban-rural divide issue for some reason, because my counties are not that big and their staffs are not that large. And the fact is that we are now dumping more work on county clerks, and the ability of the counties to fund those offices is diminishing rapidly. You can call this a tax or you can call it an unfunded mandate. Either way you go, this is not the right thing to do. And colleagues, isn't it amazing? The more government gets involved in things, the worse things seem to get.
Thanks, Senator Cruz. For the discussion, Senator Johnson, do you wish to close?
I do not.
Senator Devlin demands a call of the House, joined by Skinner. Darn it. It's because there's House members on the floor. I know it. I don't know what that's all about. I need some help. Senator Devlin demands a call of the Senate. He's joined by Senator Johnson and Senator Rosenbaum. The doorkeepers will bar the doors, and the sergeant-at-arms will attend. The clerk will call the roll. What is the matter?
Atkinson.
Get me that.
Bates. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Farioli. George. Gerard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Metzger. Montes-Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Prozonsky. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Berger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. President Courtney.
He's here. Who's not here? Someone's not here. Senator
Metzger.
They're all, which school? We're looking for Senator Metzger
We are looking for him now. Yes, we're here. He's all members subject to the call are present. The question now arises upon the third reading and the final passage of House Bill 2436. Those who are of the opinion the bill should pass will answer ayes. The names are called. Those opposed, no. The clerk will please call the roll.
Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Prezonsky. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Verger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Haas. Johnson. President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused. Nelson. Voting no. Atkinson. Boquist. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Cruz. Starr. Telfer. Whitsett. Winters. Star changes.
Star changes. Yes.
Okay. Excused. Nelson. Voting no. Atkinson. Boquist. Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Cruz. Telfer. Whitsett. Winters. 20 ayes.
Senator Winters, what purpose do you rise? Do you want to change your vote?
Vote explanation.
We're not there yet. Uh-huh. Just to make sure that I'll make a mistake like I had before. So I'm about to put the gavel down, so I assume the red lights have nothing to do with the gavel. House Bill 2436, having received a constitutional majority, declared passed. Senator Winters, for what purpose do you rise?
Vote explanation.
Please file your vote explanation.
I voted aye in the for Ways and Means to move the process along with the understanding that I would be a no on the floor because this is a tax increase.
Thank you. Your vote explanation has been placed in the record. Senator Starr, please. Senator Whitsett, please.
Mr. President, vote explanation.
Please file your vote explanation.
Mr. President, my county clerks in the five counties that I represent say that this bill does not apply equally to all fees collected, that each fee must be evaluated as to whether this new tax is applicable. Then a daily report or a day sheet accounting the funds collected must be made to the treasurer. This increased workload has not been accurately characterized and certainly is not compensated. And I'm following the advice of my county clerks in voting no. Thank you.
Thank you. The vote explanation has now been placed on the record. Action executive appointments requiring Senate confirmation. Introduction, first reading of Senate measures.
Senate Bill 636 relating to marks used in commerce and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 637 relating to post management for schools. Senate Bill 638 relating to family leave. Senate Bill 639 relating to Oregon Wheat Commission. Senate Bill 640 relating to licensing of real estate professionals. Senate Bill 641 relating to health care and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 642 relating to urban renewal. Senate Bill 643 relating to physical education appropriating money and declaring an emergency. Senate Bill 644 relating to transmission lines on land zoned for exclusive farm use. Senate Bill 645 relating to animal source programs. Senate Bill 650 relating to financial administration of education service districts.
President, to the President's referral, I'm going to see what we can do with the calendar. We're going into the new now. We're going to see what we can do. Second reading of Senate measures.
Senate Bill 394 relating to property tax rule and prescribing an effective date. Senate Bill 409 relating to blackberries and declaring an emergency.
Passed to the calendar. Third reading of Senate measures. The clerk will read the bill.
Senate Joint Memorial 5 urging Congress to enact legislation creating Office of the National Nurse.
Recognize Senator Montes Anderson, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Joint Memorial 5 comes from the Senate Committee on Health Care and Veterans Affairs with a unanimous vote. Basically, it urges Congress to enact legislation creating the Office of the National Nurse. As you all know, the health care system here is failing, actually, the American people and definitely thousands of Oregonians. There are increasing epidemics of preventable diseases, health disparities continue, and health literacy remains a problem for far too many people. And there's really very little focus on preventative medicine in the current system. America prides itself on being the wealthiest power in the world, but health care we have really little to brag about.
Every year, $1.3 trillion is spent on managing the impact of the seven most common chronic diseases, and most of them are preventable. Too often, our patients return knowing many rehospitalizations could be prevented if we had a system committed to wellness at the national level and reinforced by nurses in every community. The office, led by the national nurse, would be a position within an already established healthcare agency, and the recommendation is that the chief nurse officer of the United States public health system be head of the Office of the National Nurse, as this is a position that currently exists and is funded. This position, though, needs to be modernized and the job responsibilities shifted to primarily focus on serving as the driving force to deliver messages of prevention to all Americans. The Office of the National Nurse would serve to inspire, engage nurses to become community service volunteers. It would encourage participation in existing organizations like the Medical Reserve Corps. It would add to the focus on delivering health promotion information in the communities. These volunteers would engage as community partners to introduce and emphasize and reinforce prevention. The goal is to improve health outcomes by teaching and promoting healthier living to create a culture of prevention. Nurses have been a pivotal role in promoting preventative care since they spend more time with patients than any other healthcare professional. The healthcare system needs to empower and encourage nurses for them to be effectively engaged in this role. I urge an aye vote on SJM 5.
Thank you. Recognize Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to urge my support for Senate Joint Memorial 5 and let my colleagues know that this is an effort that was started in Oregon several years ago, and the proponents have really reached out nationally and gathered bipartisan support in Congress for this Office of the National Nurse. They've done a tremendous amount of work, and I believe that Senate Joint Memorial 5 recognizes that, and I urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion? Question now rises upon the third reading and final passage, SJM 5. Those opinion bills pass out. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Metzger. Montes Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Prezonsky. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Ferger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick,
Senator Burdick,
Carter,
sir.
Devlin, Dingfelder, Farioli, George, Girard, Haas, Johnson, Cruz. President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused. Nelson. 29 ayes.
SJM 5, having received a constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk reads bill.
Senate Bill 9, relating to mandatory health insurance coverage of treatment of inborn errors of metabolism and declaring an emergency.
Recognize Senator Jeff Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. President and colleagues. If this is the last bill of the week, it's a great bill to end with. Mr. President, I want to thank you for your work on this issue over the years. Mr. President, you and I have collaborated on several things in our time together in the building. None of them have necessarily been things that have changed the world, but issues like this clearly, totally changed the world for some people. And in ways beyond belief. Colleagues, what this bill does, it removes a sunset on requirements of health insurers, health care service contractors, and multiple employer welfare arrangements for providing food for kids or actually adults with inborn errors of metabolism, otherwise known as PKU. Also want to acknowledge the work that OHSU has done in this area, because they're the ones that came up with the test. What we have here, colleagues, is a very small group of kids who can lead absolutely normal lives with a very restricted diet. Mr. President, when you first brought this issue to us in 97, the opportunities these kids had in their dietary supplements were incredibly limited. What we have seen over a decade later is that the foods that they can purchase are everything from pizza to what most people eat. They're just constructed differently. Colleagues, I ask to carry this bill, knowing how important this issue is to the president, because I have a grandnephew who was diagnosed with PKU. He's a year and a half old, and he's an absolutely normal child. Without this diagnosis and without these food supplements or this diet that he is on, his life would have been entirely different. And also, Mr. President, when you gave your testimony, you didn't know at the time, the young lady, the little kid in 97, who you did the bill for, was in the room. Mr. President, I'm honored to join you in this effort. We were together in 97, we were together in 2003, and now we're removing the sunset. So these kids now have certainty that their life-sustaining and life-fulfilling dietary needs can be met. This has been an incredible collaborative effort, and I, Mr. President, I give you all the credit in the world for this, for staying on top of this, and the life that you have allowed these children to have now is a testament to your compassion and your hard work. So thank you for bringing this forward, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Cruz. Further discussion? Question now arises upon a third reading of the final passage of SB 9. Those in opinion bills will pass, say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Monis Anderson. Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Prezonsky. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Verger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson. Bates. Bonamici. Boquist. Burdick. Carter. Devlin. Dingfelder. Ferrioli. George. Girard. Haas. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. President Courtney.
Yes.
Excuse Nelson. 29 ayes.
Senate Bill 9, having received constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate Bill 40, relating to surplus revenue refunds.
Recognize Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Bill 40 changes the calculation for calculating kicker refunds in years where there is a kicker distributed to taxpayers. Basically, under current law, kicker revenues are calculated before the allowance of credits, tax credits such as the Betsy credit and the credit for the cultural trust and things like that. This bill actually comes out of a correction for a bill we passed last session. We changed the formula at that time. Before last session, the kicker was calculated on credits after on taxes after credits. We changed it before credits so that we would not discourage people from using the Betsy credit, the cultural trust credit, and such. But inadvertently, we included in that the credit that taxpayers take for taxes they pay for out of state. And what this results in, what this resulted in, is that some taxpayers who paid out-of-state taxes actually got and paid no Oregon tax because the out-of-state tax credit offset it. They ended up paying no Oregon tax, and yet they got a kicker refund. And your Senate Finance and Revenue Committee did not consider this to be a fair thing whatsoever. So we brought you Senate Bill 40 unanimously to correct this problem. So this would continue the calculation for tax credits, but it would calculate out-of-state credits for out-of-state tax payments after those for kicker refunds after those credits. So I recommend an aye vote.
Thanks, Senator. Any further discussion? Motion to authorize on third reading and the final passage of Senate Bill 40. Those in favor, bills to pass, say aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk, please call the roll.
Monroe. Morissette. Morse. Nelson. Prezonsky. Prezonsky. Rosenbaum. Schrader. Schrader. Starr. Telfer. Ferger. Walker. Whitsett. Winters. Atkinson, Bates, Bonamici, Boquist, Burdick, Carter, Carter.
Who? Senator Carter. Senator Carter.
Devlin.
Aye.
Dingfelder.
Aye.
Ferrioli. George. Gerard. Pass. Johnson. Cruz. Metzger. Montes Anderson. President Courtney.
Yes.
Excused. Nelson. Voting no. Atkinson. George. 27 ayes.
Senate Bill 40, I have received a constitutional majority. It's quite a pass. I'll carry over the remaining Senate bill to the Monday, March 2nd calendar without objection. First reading of the House measures.
House Bill 2041 relating to road machinery, House Bill 2197 relating to workers' compensation, House Bill 2234 relating to regulation of activities in the state highway rights of way.
Transmit to the President's desk referral. Second reading of House measures. Other business of the Senate, of course, with SR 8.403 committee referral list number 51, which is distributed to members February 25th. Referrals will be recorded in the Journal of the State's report and so ordered. What? I don't know where he is. Please note that on Monday is at 5 o'clock, you have to have in your bills, bill drafts to the Secretary of the Senate by 5 o'clock on Monday. It's the deadline. It's the deadline. Please, it's the deadline. Other announcements? Seeing none, if there are no further announcements and without objection, the Senate is adjourned until 10:15 on Monday, March 2nd.